Hi everyone, and welcome to Coffee with Innovate Finance, our podcast series where we speak to industry leaders on financial innovation and fintech. Our podcasts are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. My name is Mike Carter. I'm Head of Platform Lending at Innovate Finance, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Mike Bristow, CEO and founder of Crown Property. Mike, lovely to have you here.
Hi Mike, great to be here. Many thanks.
So we're going to dive down into your business during the podcast, but to kick off, just give our listeners a little bit of your own background and how you came to fintech and how you came to Crown Property.
Sure, I graduated many years ago, worryingly so, went into strategy consulting, spent many years working with private equity funds on buyouts and corporate strategy, but all alongside 18 years doing that, I was investing in property and had a big passion for property. Alongside investing in quite a lot of prop tech businesses, I also had a fascination around fintech and marketplace businesses, and felt pain myself, and as did my two co-founders, to say, actually, we think that finance for small and medium-sized property developers was broken, and we felt that we had a vision to solve that. And had the personal expertise and insights to build a brilliant proposition focusing on exactly that customer base. So I'd seen over my career a lot of different sectors, a lot of different businesses, good, bad, average, etc., and really honing in a lot of insights from all of those sectors into building the PropTech FinTech business that is Crown Property.
That's great. So tell us a bit about who are your customers and the products that you're providing to them.
Certainly, yeah. So our customers are small and medium-sized property developers. And our mission is to unlock the potential of those small and medium-sized property developers to basically build much-needed, undersupplied homes, helping them to grow their businesses quicker and drive spend in the economy on labour, materials and services, which is a really property developers are a meaningful contributor to that in the market. And that's the core, that's the asset side of our marketplace lending business. But fundamentally, you've got to, to set up a business in whatever space, you have to identify a pain and have a route to solve it. And solve that better, quicker, more efficiently, etc. Than certainly market incumbents, and B, create barriers to market entrants. And that's the vision we held. Now, it so happens, as is the case in so many fintechs, and in particular in marketplace lending, the incumbents are big financial institutions. And the incumbents in our market, we are a specialist property development lender. The incumbents in that market are major banks and major non-bank lenders in a very large market funding the development of anywhere between 150,000 and the kind of level of house building we should be doing in this country of 340,000. Now, we don't get near to that limit, which is part of the issue we're looking to solve. The insight to be able to do that very much came from not only the sort of fintech and proptech and what technology can bring perspectives, but also deep customer understanding, deep asset class expertise in both property and property development specifically.
So that really gets to the nub, I think, Mike, in terms of fintechs are very much looking to disrupt existing markets. They're going up against big players. So what are the key features of your product and service or the way you approach it that really give you the edge over some of these larger incumbents?
Well, interestingly, many of those factors are propositional to property developers. Okay, and what I mean by that is we don't go out and tell property developers that we've built brilliant technology. We go out and tell them that we are we can provide greater speed, ease, and certainty, but also transparency and expertise around exactly what they're trying to do. We are exceptionally customer focused on delivering what they need, what understanding what they need, which we had a very good view of. We do a lot of research in our business, and then delivering what they need to unlock their potential house building and spending the economy. In a market where we had experienced, myself and my co-founders had experienced ourselves, actually was not customer focused and didn't really understand what property developers were trying to achieve, nor the complexities of it, nor the challenges of it, nor actually, quite frankly, putting on a pair of boots and getting on site and working with those developers, right? Now, you can only deliver to that promise, those promises, especially around speed and ease and some of the other factors, if you have a brilliant system, okay? A brilliant technology system, brilliant set of processes, brilliant set of people that you knit together in a super smart way to create something that is fundamentally scalable, okay, in something that very, very few, if any, had truly built a scalable operating system to deliver this service, right? So that is our core. And everything we work on in terms of our software engineers are delivering to that promise to our customers that we're a better source of capital for their projects.
And tell me, what's interesting I find when I talk to alternative lenders, particularly those who have been going several years like you have, is that in the earlier days, everyone had to build all the pieces themselves. Whereas now lenders are telling me actually we buy in a lot of the pieces because there's a lot of good outsourced solutions there, and actually we're not trying to be the expert in a particular software area. We're trying to be the expert in our business area. How what's your view on the evolution of buy or build?
I think there is a huge spectrum within that. Technology is about Lego bricks. And piecing things together. It's not necessarily always starting from first principles. But there are different ways to deliver that. And I know a lot of businesses who have a lot of their work, if not all of it, offshore, outsourced, et cetera. What we're trying to do here is build technology that delivers something that fundamentally has almost always been a human process. Underwriting for property development projects is hard. It is not an algorithmic activity. However, all the processes, systems, workflows, data, analytics that sit around it that empower asset class expert human beings can be made far more efficient, far quicker, far better with technology. And on that basis, the development of our technology platform alongside our asset class expertise is paramount to what we're doing. So all our technology development is in-house in our office in Birmingham, because we not only see the imperative of building that in close collaboration with our asset class experts, but also having a shared culture in the fundamental mission that we're looking to achieve. And that is the customer outcome of unlocking the potential of small and medium-sized developers.
Thanks. So I want to come back a little later to some of the impact of some of the technology in other areas, such as in credit and other use of RegTech and other areas. But before we come to that, let's go to the bigger picture, which is the housing market in the UK, because that's obviously crucial to your customers, your house builders, and therefore crucial to your business. You do a lot of research. I've read a lot of your research, and I've seen you speaking on this a lot. And I know you have a lot of views on this. The government, government policy has chopped and changed a lot in recent years. There are always house building targets. There are stamp duty changes. There's Help to Buy, et cetera, et cetera. Where are we in terms of that equilibrium of government policy, what do you feel is working, and what do you feel needs to be done, particularly as we go into a recession?
So first and foremost, big macro picture validates the pain we felt as individuals and why we set up this business. So what do I mean by that? The UK as a whole is remarkably and spectacularly good at building 200,000 homes a year, remarkably consistent. Okay, and therein lies one of the problems. We need circa 340,000 homes. Slight variances depending on which white paper or which commentator you're referencing from. But let's take an example here. So in 2008, we built 200,000 homes. 30% of that supply was from small and medium-sized developers. Right? Now, small and medium-sized developers are very, very important in this country because they do not need large, scarce plots of land to enable them to build their economically feasible housing schemes of 20, 30, 40, 50, 100, 200, 400 units. Right? You could almost look out any window, and there will be plentiful opportunities out of that window for a small and medium-sized developer to build housing for this country. Right? So that is why they're fundamentally important. Those site opportunities for housing are almost infinite, as opposed to large tracts of land. Now, so 30% of supply, so 60,000 homes in 2008 built by small developers. Wind forward 2017, so away from the noise post-GFC. And sure enough, we as a country built 200,000 homes. Our target market, small and medium-sized developers, only built 10% of that, as opposed to 30% of that eight years previous. So 20,000 homes. Now, one can either look at that and say, well, that's a dog of a market. It's economically inefficient for small developers to build things. Therefore, it's going to fade away and it moves to scale, right? But that's not right because of the plentiful opportunities out there. And if you go and ask small and medium-sized developers, as we do in our research, they say that number one, better sources of finance for their projects is the number one thing that would enable them to build more. Right. So that's the problem we're solving that we observed at the micro level. We observed very much at the macro level is strategically important for this country. Interestingly, the next few items that they say are number two is an improving economy. And actually, this is pre-recessionary concerns. So that's a collective effort. You can't single-handedly solve that. Number three is planning legislation. And number four is taxation policy. Okay. So numbers three and four are right in the heartland of government control around property in this country. And you can see that because during the pandemic, the government pulled both of those levers, taxation, predominantly around stamp duty holidays, yeah. And they're doing that again, and planning, where relaxing enables more schemes to be feasible. And so it's with those two levers that the government is aware they are very important to this sector. They are very important to all house building. And both of those are complex, especially the planning regime. So I think that there is knowledge that they are barriers to development, and there is activity towards working towards the simplification or the easing of those two, but there is plentiful more work to do to enable the fundamentally economically productive activity of building homes.
So in actual fact, what you're saying is based upon your survey, I mean, the quick win to getting more development done actually is making sure that there is enough finance available for the developers in the right form.
Interestingly, it's actually, this is a mistake often made. It's not about the quantum of finance made available. It's how easy that is to access.
Yeah.
There are pots of money that get topped up that small developers will spend 12 months trying to apply for. And guess what? That scheme's either gone away to someone else or whatever. There are plentiful issues of the distribution of money, especially in this space, because it's not purely algorithmic that you can just distribute and underwrite and assess, right? So it's a complex process to underwrite. And that complexity is the challenge that we are tackling.
So you touched on there the pots of money. Now, you're the number three ranked peer-to-peer platform, and you've always had a very strong retail business, but you've also diversified your funding in recent years. Tell us a bit about your funding strategy and how you marry together the different funding sources.
Yeah. So I said earlier that developers need a speedy certainty, transparency, and expertise of finance. So the certainty piece is the critical piece here. We believe that certainty comes from diverse sources of capital. Okay. It's very easy to point to the recent pandemic where non-bank lenders with single wholesale lines of capital had to pull out of the market, right? They were exposed. We have clearly tens of thousands of platform investors made up of all different types, but also multiple institutional funding lines that enable us to ensure reliability in any market. And we proved that perfectly through COVID as pretty much the most reliable, most consistent lender in the market. A specific example here, and this is this challenge is really important in property development, okay? Because multiple instances where a non-bank lender may have to just pause, and that means two things: is A, reneging on offers, but most crucially, there's letting down drawdowns on projects, which basically destroy property development projects. Because I mean, the one rule is you don't give the property developer all the money up front, right? So you go through a validated progress and spend drawdown process, right? And that is really important to have certainty of funding throughout the project. So everything that we've built builds the diversity of capital, the certainty of capital, and the ability to fund in any market, as long as the fundamental project stacks up and makes economic sense to undertake, because we need to see that on the security level and also on the getting paid back level.
Certainly, I remember during COVID, apart from the brief pause in the first lockdown where everyone just stopped to see what was going to happen. I mean, I remember you were funding loans pretty much the whole year, and I remember your announcements were going out and they were getting funded that day. And there seemed to be no pause in terms of your ability to fund deals. And in fact, I mean, I suppose because of your retail business, we can look on your website, you've got very good transparency of your lending business. And when I looked the other day, I could see that you've grown volumes at something like 75% a year for the last four or five years. So you actually came through COVID pretty much unscathed and growing strongly.
Exactly. We saw a lot of the market come out. And we backed good property developers doing good projects who deserve to be backed. Okay. And one of the things with property development finance is clearly there was a bucket load of uncertainty during that time, right? But government instruction was that construction work and property development can continue, and for good reason, right? A lot of it is outdoors. A lot of it could be made safe. We shared a lot of the sort of the protocols around how to ensure that site can continue in a safe manner. The government guidelines around it, as well as our own advice, that's nothing to do with technology. That's good customer relationship management. Right, and supporting your book and supporting your developers and supporting your customers, right? And it's those things coupled with our efficiency that drives an exceptional repeat business rate in this market, and that's testament to us delivering on those fundamental customer needs.
So your stats also show, which ties into this, that I think they still show this, that you've had zero realized credit losses since inception.
Zero realized credit losses and zero realized interest losses. Correct.
Which is pretty remarkable. So how do you achieve that in a lending business?
Well, I mean, it's interesting when you talk to global asset managers, etc., who will come in as our sort of funding partners and future funding partners, etc., because despite 8 years of lending and backing 600 and whatever 30, 40 million pounds worth of projects, they don't have a data point to refer to in terms of loss rate, so, which is a good problem to have. The counter to that could be that we're not pushing the envelope enough. Now I and we as a business have a culture that is, we are very robust in underwriting and cautious with our lending. And that is critically important to building a long-term business. And so we're right to err on that caution, but it's interesting hearing the other perspectives from financial institutions. Look, what we will see at some point is that record being compromised, right? At some point that will happen. And in the long run, we have expected losses, we have probability of defaults, loss given defaults, all of the sort of the expected metrics that we would that any robust institution would expect. At the end of the day, as forecasts go, it's we are a very well proven lender in this market and very backable, which is clearly the case with the popularity when we went out recently, or actually not that recently, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, to secure another funding line, and ongoing conversations with major global institutions who look at our business and say, well, that's a powerful business to back. The really interesting thing is, and it's sort of just dwelling on the sort of platform lending sort of principle. Marketplace lending came about, and it's almost like beautifully disintermediating, especially in property. So, well, I term it as it, well. It's a more efficient matching of the supply and demand of capital. Right? What do I mean by that? Well, an individual, all money is owned by individuals, right? And if an individual can place that directly to a developer, rather than say through an IFA, through a generous fund, through a property fund, through a broker, to the developer, etc., there's less inefficiency, there's less cost and profit. It's a market economy at the end of the day that take away from that individual's capital and the value that's created by using. The really interesting thing is that we proved over many years that that because of our asset class expertise and focus, we found very good projects. We were delivering exceptional returns on that efficient lending model. You have major financial institutions coming in and effectively re-intermediating that market because the capital they have ultimately is owned by an individual, right? So it's a really interesting dynamic, but it's a massive validation because not every individual can do the level of due diligence that a major institution will come in with saying, right, I'm gonna back you to the tune of 450 million over the next X years, right? I need to know a lot about your business before I commit to that. And that is a blue room sort of bellwether. Stamp of authority to say, actually, we are an exceptional lender in this market.
And presumably on the retail side, they can invest through an ISA or through a SIPP, can they?
Exactly. Yeah. All of the options, auto-invest, self-select, all of those sort of different things. So yes, but the crucial thing is we have built diverse sources of capital that gives many, many different players opportunities that drive the reliability to fundamentally back great property developers.
Well, before we wrap up, a couple of other things I wanted to touch on. So one, you mentioned earlier that you're based in Birmingham. So there's a lot of discussion around levelling up. You're living it. You're not talking about it. Tell us about the pros and cons of being a fintech business based in Birmingham.
I think it was an exceptionally wise move very early on to decide to set the business up in Birmingham. I've run the analysis. When I last ran the analysis, I reckon my fixed cost base overall is 55% less than if it was in London. That enables me to build a better resourced business and leverage those better economics to build the business quicker, more robustly, more sustainably, and build out better technology. That's number one. Number two, London is I love it. It's a great city. I live there myself, right? So, but it is more of a transient worker population. And so in Birmingham, I get longer retention, and that's on a few reasons, right? There's less transient, number one. And number two, I can build a stronger employer brand in this market and stand out more, and really attract great people and retain great people. And those two things, yes, they go to economics, but they're also another compounding enhancement on me being able to build a more scalable, more rapidly growing, more robust business as we go through the sort of the stages of growth. And then less related to technology or anything, but on a practical property level, we've got a more central location across the UK, which is where we fund and we need to get out to places. So there are a number of reasons why the Birmingham base is fantastic for us.
So for entrepreneurs looking to start out, there are plenty of reasons why Birmingham should be on their list.
Exactly. Yes, definitely.
Okay. That's good to hear. So looking forward, Mike, obviously we've got a recession to get through, but where do you want Crab Properties to be in a few years' time?
Well, we have clearly big ambitions of our upside potential of UK market share for backing property developers. And we are working very hard on building the scalability of our system where we observe next to no truly scalable businesses have been built. That is number one. And look, we've backed circa 3,000, we funded the development of circa 3,000 homes now. As I said, 640 million odd of property projects. This is still the start. The upside potential is huge, and we deliver to this market better, and we enhance the probability of success of our customers by the way we operate and the way we go about this market and the way we understand this market, and we will do that for many, many thousands more properties and more developers. There are then some dynamics under that product extension, international markets, etc., and we're currently proving. We launched in Australia in May 2021, and we're proving that market at the moment and the appetite for our business model in that market as well. And I was out there pretty much on the first anniversary of launch, and they and the team there had achieved in 1 year what we achieved here in the UK in 3 years, leveraging technology we have, leveraging the IP, leveraging the brand, leveraging all of those factors. And we're excited about that market. And actually the pain, the fundamental pain of property developers is greater there than we have observed here in the UK market.
So you're still near the start of your journey, is what you're saying.
Still just the start. I'm excited that's by that. And our we've got a team of 55 here in Birmingham. We've got a team of 9 in Sydney as well. And everyone is there, everyone across the businesses are very excited about the potential we have, see that potential, and know that it has a huge upside delivering for property developers and investors globally.
That's great to hear, Mike. Well, look, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. I've really enjoyed the discussion. I haven't congratulated you yet on being awarded Property Development Lender of the Year by one of the trade associations. So congratulations on that. And thank you for coming along this afternoon. To our listeners, we hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please keep an eye out for upcoming episodes on our podcast channels, and all of our previous episodes are available on our website. So please look at our catalogue and you'll see many other insights on fintech and financial innovation. Thanks once again, Mike. And thank you to Curtis, our producer, always in the background, but never in the foreground. And join us next time for Coffee with Innovate Finance. Bye for now.